Doe's are back. With KB.
I may be an idiot.
Buster.
But there is one thing I am not, sir.
And Tony.
And that is an idiot.
On Sports Radio 1450, The Hall.
CBS Sports Radio 1450, The Hall. Average Joe Show 2.0. Occasionally you get these guests, you run into people that are just more meaningful than this sports banter that we do, and it's been a real festive week here in Western Massachusetts and in New England, obviously, right? I mean, our New England Patriots are Super Bowl champions. But last week while I was in Phoenix...
And people hate the Seahawks.
Yeah, and people hate the Seahawks.
More people hate the Patriots, unfortunately.
Our next guest played for the Seahawks, as well as having played for the Steelers and the Rams. But that's not really why Jeremy Stott it's not why how he's making his legacy now. Jeremy Stott was a second-round pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1998. He was an Arizona State legend, friends with Pat Tillman. And he is now, awesomely, a professor of welding at a college in Northern California. But most importantly, he is a U.S. Marine. And he spent some time with me last week walking around Radio Row, really, I'm not going to say bringing the room down, but I'm going to say reminding people what this giant game that we celebrate so much is really worth. And Jeremy's agreed to talk about his journey and his mission with us on the air today. So, Jeremy, how's it going, brother?
Good. How are you?
Great. It's great to hear your voice again. Hope the family's doing well and hope the trip back to California was great.
Oh, it was awesome. It's always good to come home to my wife smiling and my son screaming my name. And, you know, just a great homecoming. And it's always good to come home.
That's as good as it gets. And we were joking, you, Clint, Bruce, and I, about potentially you might not have your teaching gig when you got back because you just kind of bounced. You're still employed, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely employed and loving it, and I love what I teach here at school at the Bakersfield Junior College. I mean, it's all about trade skills for me.
Awesome.
I just love trade skills, and I just know this is my calling, and I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing for now.
For now, exactly. Now, Jeremy, let's talk about your journey, because there's so much about the intricacies of your journey, and we have such a military region in which we broadcast here with an Air Force base, two Air Force bases real nearby, and a number of bases of all branches pretty nearby as well. Let's start at the beginning, though. Let's start at the beginning at Arizona State, where you and Pat Tillman became friends. Can you sort of talk to us about that 1998 season when you guys are realizing that a professional football career is in the works? I mean, you were a higher draft pick. You had a higher draft stock than Pat Tillman.
Oh, absolutely. You know, coming into to Arizona State, I was actually – came out of my alma mater, Bakersfield Junior College, which I'm now teaching at.
It's awesome.
You know, coming into Arizona State, when I first, you know, coming into ASU, literally ASU wasn't ranked to do anything. They come off a pretty bad season. I signed with them because I just wanted to get out of California.
Uh-huh.
But signed with ASU and got there, and we had our first team meeting. I just remember this little 5'11" guy, maybe 190 pounds, walking in the room, and just all of a sudden the whole room just erupts. And, oh, and I'm like, who is this guy? You know, already I don't like him. You know, you know, kind of find out it was Pat Tillman, and everybody was giving him a little bit of ration because he had cut all his hair off. You know, he loved his long locks. He was a little surfer dude, and he had cut all his hair off, basically giving himself a buzz, and so everybody, you know, wasn't prepared for that when he walked in, and so. But through the 96 season, you know, we kind of gelled together. I was an offensive tackle turned defensive tackle and, you know, got on the field in 96, wound up beating the unbeaten Nebraska Huskers. 3 years, they were unbeaten for 3 years, I believe it was, and we wound up smacking them down 19-0. And then that was kind of the start of that season. We wound up going to the 97 Rose Bowl for a national championship against Ohio State. And then also I was able to play in the 1997 Sun Bowl down in El Paso, Texas. But during the playing time, or during our teams together, our teamship, or being together, those two seasons, you know, we kind of built a bond, Pat and I, and wind up getting drafted in the same year in '98, which we also had the same agent, Frank Bauer. You know, Pat wasn't really getting looked at by a lot of teams because they called him a tweener,
mm-hmm.
which is basically a guy that's, you know, he was too small to play inside linebacker and too mm-hmm. slow to be a DB, so teams weren't looking at him. He wasn't being heavily recruited. He didn't have an agent. And by that time, I had already been signed by Frank. I said, hey, Frank, man, you need to take a look at this guy. You know, he's Pac-10 defensive player, all this kind of stuff, and yet nobody's looking at him. And he said, well, you know, he told me the same thing. Well, he's a tweener. I said, well, you know, he's giving a shot. And long story short, I was drafted, you know, of course, in the second round. 41st took over, and Pat was drafted in the seventh round. And our agent said, well, congratulations for getting drafted. And now I have to really work because you guys went to the two worst teams to negotiate. It was the Arizona Cardinals. But, you know, Pat and I, we had, like I said, we had this brotherly love, a relationship, a love-hate relationship. And, you know, any time that Pat was, you know, stepping out of line, if you will, or I was doing something that I shouldn't have been doing, you know, Frank would call the other one and say, hey, call Jeremy and tell him to stop doing this. Or, hey, Jeremy, call Pat and find out what's going on. But, you know, throughout the relationship to the NFL, we always had each other's backs. And he was one of those guys where you always knew who you stood with. And Frank knew that, you know, when Pat talked to me, I'd listen. And after I was released from Seattle in 2001, 9/11 happened. So I got released in August. And like a week and a half later, you know, 9/11 happened. And I just said, you know what, Frank, just tell these teams that are calling that I'm good to go. I'm leaving football. I'm going to join the Army. And Frank said, why would you do that? You know, you got 3 years under your belt. You need one more for your retirement. And I said, well, you know, Frank, I'm done. There's more to life than this. And sure, I'm kind of overplaying this game because, you know, the game of football doesn't, you know, it doesn't dictate who I am. It was just a chapter in my life. And so anyway, so I decided to call it quits then. But, of course, you know, Frank called Pat and said, hey, Pat, call Jeremy. He says he wants to join the Army. You know, call him up and find out what's going on. And so Pat called me up, and this is a conversation that lasted for probably about 2 hours.
Oh, really?
Wow. We're just going, oh, yeah, going back and forth, yelling and screaming at each other. And finally I said, all right, Pat, you know what, I'll make you a promise. I said, I'll go back in the league, and I'll get my final year, my fourth year for my, you know, for my retirement and my investment. And I said, after that, you can't tell me how to live my life. You know, and I'm one of those guys, you know, I'm a type of person, I don't make a promise unless I know I can keep it. So I went ahead and called our agent, Frank, back. I said, all right, Frank, I'm ready to go. You know, find out what team wants me, and I'll go play.
Yeah.
Well, at that time, it was Oakland, and Bill Callahan was the head or the offensive coordinator at the time, uh-huh, and the line coach. And so I signed with Oakland as an offensive guard. And then
really? Okay.
That just happened to be the off season where Pat had this $3.6 million contract yep. on the table
right.
and wouldn't sign it. So Frank calls me and says, hey, Patty's got this $3.6 million contract on the table. He's not going to sign it. You know, why don't you go talk to him? And I said, all right. Of course, this is at Pat's wedding that was in Pleasanton. We got married in that off season. So I'm at the wedding with Pat and Marie. And I said, hey, Pat, you know, Frank says you got this contract on the table and you're not going to sign it. What's going on? And he said, you know what, let's not worry about that. This is my wedding. I've got some other stuff to get around to. I'll get to it. You know, and it's like when you got a $3.6 million contract on the table and you're going to get around to it. And I'm like, well, what else is going on in his life that he can't sign this contract? Well, you know, lo and behold, a couple months later, the world was made aware of what he was doing. And yeah. his brother Kevin had enlisted in the Army. And so, you know, when I had the opportunity to talk to him, I think it was after he got back from Iraq, honestly.
Uh-huh.
And once again, Frank called and said, hey, you know, we found a loophole on Patty's contract. You know, he's seen combat experience. He can get out of the military.
Wow.
And go back to playing ball. I said, all right, well, I'll call him and see what he wants to do with that. And this was actually when I signed on with St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And it was once again in the off season. I said, all right, well, you know, hey, Frank, or hey, Pat, you know, what's going on? How's the life? Oh, things great. And I said, well, hey, Frank's got this loophole in your contract. You need to get out of the Army and go back to playing ball. And he said, no. He said, I've signed up for a 4-year deal, and I'm going to finish out my contract. And, you know, I made this commitment. I'm going to do it. And I said, all right, well, you know, don't be a hero. And that was when he left for Afghanistan, and
wow.
you know what happened after that.
Yeah.
So, but for me, I wound up getting my fourth season that year with St. Louis. I got my four games that I needed. I earned my retirement and basically retired from professional athletics in 2003. And then I figured, well, heck, I got one retirement. Why not get another one out of the AFL, which is the Arena Football League? So in 2004, I went ahead and signed with the LA Avengers to start working on a second retirement through
nice.
The AFL. Yeah, and so, of course, the season starts in January, and by April, the news had broke that Patty had been killed, and so I just basically said, you know what, I'm completely done with this.
Yeah.
And that's when I took off my helmet and my shoulder pads and walked off the field forever from professional athletics. Excuse me. And then it took me about a year and a half. Well, about a year. You know, I did some serious soul searching. Uh-huh. I wasn't living a godly life, if you will. And I just decided, you know what, if there's a God up there, I'm going to do something that's going to really test my faith. And I decided to join the United States Marine Corps in 2005, December of 2005, and did 4 years in the Marine Corps as an infantry machine gunner and toured Iraq, had a little vacation there.
it's beautiful that time of year, I hear.
Oh, absolutely. Ramadan's going on, so there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. Ramadan's kind of like their Christmas. They decorate their houses, and you know, it's their time where they do a lot of fasting from sunup to sundown. And excuse me. And you know, it was quite an adventure. But did my time. And then once I was up in 2009, moved back home to Bakersfield, California, and married my wife.
We're speaking with United States Marine Jeremy Stott, also a welding professor, and I love this about him. Like, and a second-round pick by the Steelers. And P.S., he's only 38 years old. Like, Jeremy, you still haven't, and we haven't even gotten to your advocacy against veteran suicide, which we will get to. I mean, you have had more chapters in your life than most people by the time they reach 50.
Jeremy, let's talk real quick about your friend Pat Tillman. Before he decided to go off and fight for our freedom and become an American hero like he did, I mean, he was having a really good career. He had a great season in 2000. He was about to get that big payday you were talking about. Nobody knew his game better than you. How good could he have gotten if he decided to stay in football?
Well, you know, the sky's the limit. We'll never know. I think at that time he might even had like the NFL record for like most tackles in a season or something.
Yeah,
he had 155 tackles. Yeah, 2000.
155 tackles.
120 solo. Yeah,
unbelievable.
So I mean, you know, he planned to come back. You know, that's one of his things. He said, "You know, I'm going to do this for 4 years, and I'll come back and continue to play." But you know, unfortunately, that opportunity was never granted. So,
right.
I mean, we don't know. I mean, he could have been a Pro Bowler. I mean, he's, you know, who knows? I mean, we'll never know.
Well, I mean, even if we were grading on a curve, the way we prioritize the well-being of veterans when they come back, I mean, you got to give them like the country a C at best, don't you?
Oh, say again.
If we were grading on a curve, the way the veterans get treated when they come back, things available. I mean, the best you could possibly give a grade is C, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it just depends on where you're at. You know, I mean, as far as the treatment goes, I think there's a lot of good things that are going on out there, and there's a lot of bad things. So, I mean, I guess you could give them a C, if that's what you're saying. I just really feel that we can do more as far as equipping them to deal with, you know, problems with PTSD and alcohol abuse and drug abuse. You know, when I got back, one of the biggest things that I found amazing was that we lose 22 veterans or 20 veterans a day to suicide.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And that was just something I couldn't, you know, sleep well at night. So that's where I decided to, you know, ride a bicycle 3,468 miles across the country to raise awareness about veteran suicide and childhood obesity. But I truly believe that if we can, you know, not just with veterans, but really, you know, this whole generation of kids coming up, you know, we need to teach them trade skills, teach them how to take care of themselves, how to be self-sufficient. It's huge, and give them a reason to get out of bed.
That's right, and you know, it's something that you and I were talking about last week in Phoenix was you can't just throw them a new car, right? When veterans come back, you don't just throw a man or a woman who comes back a new car and say, "Here you go, we've taken care of you." It's more about, like you've said it a million times, giving them a reason to live, right? Not just the means, but the reason, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I can't really bear either is that, you know, a lot of our veterans are, you know, they're being exploited for other people's financial gain.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people don't realize it, and you know, it probably makes some people mad because they think that I'm trying to expose their business. But, you know, a lot of the veterans that are being exposed with a lot of these national nonprofit organizations,
uh-huh,
you know, that they're not telling the general population who are given to these nonprofits that, you know, the guys that they're parading across on the commercials and taken to these events are already being compensated by
right.
the VA anywhere from $3,000 to $12,000 a month tax-free.
Right, right, right.
It's like all this money they're raising isn't going to that guy.
Sure.
It's going to salaries and overhead.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But it's just really sad. You know, my thing is this, is that, you know, Americans, we love to forget. You know, and yeah, there was a game that was played on Sunday, and honestly, not many people are talking about it anymore because nobody really cares. And it's the same kind of thing that's going to happen with our veterans in 3 to 5 years when everyone's not talking about Iraq or Afghanistan anymore and it's on to something else.
Uh-huh.
You know, the free hunting trips, the fishing trips, and the houses go bye-bye, and these guys are still left there standing there holding, you know, these issues that they have that they haven't been able to cope with.
We're speaking with
you. It's what I call the fishbowl lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
You know, NFL guys go through it as well.
Sure.
When I left the league, I think it was 60% of NFL guys were suicidal.
Wow. 60%. Wow. We're speaking with United States Marine Jeremy Stott, former Pittsburgh Steeler, former St. Louis Ram, former Seattle Seahawk, Arizona State legend. That's a remarkable number. That's a remarkable number. And now...
Well, absolutely. And you never hear about it because the only time you heard about it was when the big-name guys started...
Yeah.
You know, offing themselves, and it was big national news.
Yeah.
Other than that, it happens all the time with these NFL guys. You got to remember that, you know, going through training camp, when the first or the second week of the season, usually there's one team photo. And
yeah.
If they were to take another team photo at the end of the season,
uh-huh.
I guarantee you probably 20 to 30% of those guys in the first photo aren't in the second.
They're gone, yeah. Yeah.
They're gone because they rotated through. So there's a lot of players that, you know, they're put up on this pedestal, and then all of a sudden, once their contract is done, they're kind of thrown out to the, you know, out the pasture as well. And they're going, wait a minute, man, just last week, you know, I'm eating with this guy, and this guy's giving this and that. And all of a sudden, now I've got to go back and find a job because I can't make rent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. God, it's stark. It's stark. It's a stark. There's one word that comes to mind, and it's not a very friendly one. It's in our past, in our country's history, and it certainly comes to mind in this case. I want to ask you one final question. We appreciate your time, Jeremy. I know that this is.
Yeah, no worries.
You transitioned to a bunch of times in your life, but the two that I like to really kind of focus on is transitioning from the NFL. To civilian life, but then also transitioning from combat back home. Were those similar, or were they different? Which one was harder? Those are two pretty giant transitions.
To be honest, they're to me they're one and the same.
Are they?
I guess the combat was a little different because, you know, when you come home and you're so ingrained to look for, you know, for me being a lead turret gunner in Iraq, and you know, I was always looking for IEDs and suspicious stuff on the side of the road. So it took me a while to get used to that. But not only that, when I was over, to be honest with you, I felt safer overseas than I do here.
Really?
Because just over there, you know, because America, we're supposed to have this constitution thing that we're supposed to live by and have all these freedoms. Well, you know, my question is, how does a country, if we're a free country, why do we have so many laws? You know, I'm a Second Amendment guy. I love to hunt and fish and do all these kind of things. And, you know, to me, I'm at a disadvantage because I can't, well, at least in California, you know, I can't carry a weapon to defend myself if some coward or some, you know, criminal decides he wants to do some harm to me. You know, I felt very vulnerable, you know, as whereas, you know, coming out of the NFL, yeah, I'd walk around and people, you know, when you're in the NFL, recognize you.
Sure.
But when you get out of it, nobody recognizes you. So that was kind of hard, just wanting to be, I guess, what's the word? I don't know. I can't think of the word right now. But like I said, the big thing for me, the transition from military to civilian was just trying to figure out a way to lawfully defend myself if something was to happen. Because you're always on that alertness. You're always looking around, situational awareness. You know, who's this? Who's that? Is this guy going to, you know, kick in my door?
Uh-huh.
What's going on? If they do, how am I going to protect myself? It's just situational awareness and basically playing scenarios in your head to react to, you know, a certain situation.
Well, Jeremy Stott, we sincerely appreciate your time, my friend. And you've made all of us in our listening audience smarter and more aware of what it means to be aware of you know, the veterans and veterans benefits and the way we should be treating our veterans. You are more than welcome on our program anytime, my friend. And give that family of yours a big squeeze tonight. We're lucky to have you.
Absolutely. No worries. And just remember that with all this technology at our fingertips, ignorance is a choice. So I tell my students,
That is so good. That is so good. I think we should all enroll in the welding class. If all of our listeners enrolled, I think your enrollment would spike and you'd immediately be like president of the college. I think that's what we're all going to move out to you.
Well, I hope so, because that's what I'm doing. I'm getting a master's right now, and then hopefully a doctorate. So a doctorate in theology, a master's in education.
Awesome. Good for you.
I love that.
Great.
Dr. Stott, it has a nice ring.
Yeah.
Jeremy, we'll chat with you soon, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jeremy Stott, legend, Arizona State legend.